Hello and welcome to the Bucket List Gamers DLC, and a very special episode of the DLC today because it is our first anniversary birthday edition. So we have been running for a year now, and we've hopefully no signs of slowing down. We've enjoyed every minute of it. Well, I say every minute of it. There's been certain points of it I've not enjoyed, but I think I've made that very clear on certain episodes. So I am, as always, joined by Eddie.
Hello.
And today we put a post on, I think we put it on Facebook, maybe Instagram, Patreon, ages ago, saying if you've got any questions you wanted us to answer, ask them and we might answer them in an upcoming episode. And we thought, what better episode to do it than now, because AMAs are all the rage, or they might be. I think that might have passed now. We always do stuff about 6 to 8 months later than other trends. So yeah, we've had a few questions sent in, which we will try our best to answer and see how we get on, whether it'll take up an episode's worth of time or whether we'll have to pad it out or cut it short or what, I don't know, but we will see how we get on. So we'll go straight in with an easy question. This was sent in by Tom, so if you're listening, Tom, thank you. Favorite games console and why? So I'll let you field that one first, Eddie.
I mean it's probably nostalgia really, but I have to say the GameCube. It is my go-to reaction whenever anyone says what games would you recommend somebody play, what's some of your favorite games of all time, I would have to say the Nintendo GameCube, just because it was the first console I properly got into, I bought practically every game for that damn thing, and it was the only console I had at the time as well. I previously and after that I had sort of the PlayStation 1 and an Xbox, or I've had the 360 and the PS3 all running at the same time, whereas this, I only had the GameCube. I didn't want to know about any other console. I just wanted to play that.
It's such a hard question because it really is like periods of your life, isn't it, that you go through these consoles. And I loved my Commodore 64 because it was the first time I'd ever experienced anything like that. But now looking back, the games probably weren't that amazing. It is just because it was my first experience of it. Love the Game Gear, but it clearly had its faults. If you look at it now, I mean, it ate batteries like there was no tomorrow. The power cable connection was loose, so if you were playing it on a power cable, it was like the bits in Until Dawn where you can't move the pad sometimes when you were playing a Game Gear with the power cable plugged in, because if you tilted it just too far, it would cut out and you'd lose all your progress. So you had to be incredibly steady-handed. So that had its faults. I mean, PlayStation 1, I've got so many happy memories of that. But again, to look at it now, I don't think I would put it up there. PS2 is probably closer, because I remember when PS2 came out, then I went and bought it for one specific wrestling game, and then, everything on PS2, Vice City, Burnout, Spider-Man, there's so many good PS2 games that it's probably looking like it would be the PS2, I think. I love my 360, and I still remember the day I got the 360 and how blown away I was by that jump again. But for me, PS2 era, so many good games, so many good memories. I was just at the right age when that came out to have loads of free time and loads of mates about that we could sit and play it all the time. The only other thing that I'd really be in with a shout is N64. But I don't know if that's because I didn't have one and I craved it so much that I look at it in a different light, because I never had one and my mates did, and I used to enjoy playing it there so much, and I had the PS1. I just put it on that pedestal, I think, and actually, if I'd have had one, I don't think I'd have that level of nostalgia for it. It's just gone one step beyond, because I got to play it so few and far between when it was first out. So I'd go PS2, and I'd probably give an honourable mention to like DS and 3DS, because I've had a lot of fun playing on them, and you don't tend to bring them into the argument, do you, when you're talking about your favourite console, but they still are. And the DS in particular, the amount of times we went on holiday and that's all I had. So I'd sit on the beach all day playing a DS game or something and having so much fun. So I'd say PS2, DS, stroke 3DS, coming a close second, and then we'd be looking at probably 360, I'd say, after that.
Yeah, I mean, I think the PS2 had one of the best catalogues of games, just in terms of quantity. And it wasn't a term in terms of quantity over quality, because there were a lot of games that are bangers now that I would happily beg for a remake or a remaster of. And it was just the sheer amount of them, and the fact that it was at a point where games weren't massively expensive, even proportional to the wage at the time. So you could go into Game or Game Station or sort of Electronics Boutique back then, and you would get four or five games that pre-owned, granted, but for like 20 quid.
Yeah.
And they were all solid. It wasn't like what you get now, where you'd struggle to get two games or a game for 20 quid that had been pre-owned and had been out for 5-6 years, and it'd be okay or on the poor end of meh. Whereas the PS2, I mean, maybe it was because we didn't know any better and our standards were a lot lower, but yeah. They were many just good games.
It was, the market was flooded with decent games, wasn't it? That's what it was. Yeah. It was just, you couldn't, I mean, and they were terrible games, don't get me wrong, but I feel like there weren't as many terrible games for PS2 as there was for PS1.
Yeah.
It seemed that the quality did seem to step up slightly, and yeah, I just have so many fond memories of PS2, like sitting around for hours playing Vice City or Saints Row, the first Saints Row for PS2, or was that 360? Might have been 360. But yeah, there's so many, like Vice City, I keep coming back to. Burnout, we played Burnout for hours. There was a couple of really good Spider-Man games on there, weren't there? That I remember when San Andreas came out, my mate had gone and queued up to get it on midnight opening, and we sat and played that for about 7 hours the first day it came out. And I've just got all these really good memories of, until the point my PS2 broke and stopped reading discs. And then I went out and bought a little platinum mini PS2, and that broke in about 3 weeks. And I had to take it back. Up till that point, yeah, so many good memories. And like even random stuff, like I remember one of my work colleagues came round one night and we ended up playing one of the Shrek games because we'd gone to Game Station and got it for like £3 for this two. We were looking for two-player games specifically, and we got Destroy All Humans, and I think it was Shrek 2. And yeah, we completed Shrek 2 start to finish in like the space of about 6 or 7 hours, and that just sticks with me, and it was such a good time. And yeah, they don't hold up particularly well now, but I think I could still go back and play a lot of them. I don't think they're awful PS2 games. They don't look terrible, do they? They'd started refining the graphics so they looked palatable rather than PS1's very angular, grainy, dirty looking graphics. So I think that's probably where I'd go. I think as much as no one probably would ever say this was their favourite console, I think something has to be said for the Wii, because yeah, I've got so many good memories of playing on the Wii, even though it wasn't particularly powerful, even though it had so much shovelware, even though, like we've said on a recent episode, none of the main franchise games had really good franchise games on the Wii. Sitting around with like six of you or whatever playing Wii Sports and all just really getting into it, or even the Mario Party that got recalled because it said in it. That was fun.
That was fun
to play on. Mario Kart, I mean, Link's crossbow training. The amount of fun we had playing Link's crossbow training, just passing it around and everyone trying to outdo other people's high scores on it. What else was there? There were so many good Wii games that brought everyone together, and you got that atmosphere. Where WarioWare, the amount of time we must have spent playing WarioWare, just passing the controller to each other and stuff. And yeah, you wouldn't ever look at it now and go, that was such a brilliant console, because there were a lot of missteps with it. But it is. It is really good. And if you were there at the time, the memories that the Wii created, I just don't think can be surpassed. I still remember when my other half bought me mine and it arrived. And there was a frenzy in the UK, weren't there, around Christmas when that came out. You just couldn't get one for love nor money. And we were working in a shop, so luckily we got first dibs on the stock that came in. So that's how we ended up getting one. Pardon the pun. And yeah, it was crazy. And you sort of look back now and go, it's a bit of a rubbish console, that. But actually, no, it wasn't. It was top notch. Yeah. It doesn't get remembered fondly because the crowbarred movement control into everything that didn't need it. And because it was quite underpowered. So even now it looks older than it is probably when you put it on a modern TV. I think that goes against it. But no, the memories that were made on that thing are immense.
Yeah, and stuff like Wii Fit Again, that was a... You wouldn't even think of going out and buying something like that now. So if they release like a fitness game on the PS5, you just go, no, you're all right, thanks, I'm not going to bother. I don't want to try and incorporate motion controls into f-ing exercise as well. I don't want to stand in my living room holding a PlayStation pad whilst raising one knee slightly and stuff like that. But the hype behind Wii Fit was ridiculous. It was one of those things that you could not get hold of at all for months and months and months and months. To the console itself when it was released, because it was released early December and my birthday is like first week in December. So it was literally like I pre-ordered it so that I had it for my birthday. But I think that era, so Wii, PS3 and 360, that was what you would really call the golden age of gaming. And after that, there has been such a degradation. We've talked about it on previous episodes where we have, as gamers, given too much over to the companies. Game companies themselves are not what they used to be. They don't do stuff for the love of it anymore. They incite crunch out of their workers so that they are forced to work over and above what would be even unreasonably expected of a workforce to get something out on time. And what they do produce is often subpar, with the caveat of, oh, it don't matter, we'll just patch it later, just get it out, just get someone to buy it. Whereas back then, everything that came out had at least a standard. I mean, the games themselves may not have been great, but they were at least tested. Predominantly, they were solid entries in various series, and a lot of them were either the peak of a series or they were a new series that was introduced that is still going to this day because of those three consoles. Granted, like you say, the Wii was the runt of the litter, the PS3 was the big black monster, reliable, but nobody really went near it because it was a bit... And the 360, everyone had one. You asked anyone in the early 2000s what games console they had, even if they weren't a big gamer, really, they all had an Xbox 360.
And most of them had Red Ring of Death. But this is it's a birthday party, so let's keep the mood up, Eddie. You were bringing me down a bit there, I'm not going to lie, with your with your scathing criticism of the way games have gone. So let's keep this birthday party happy and upbeat, shall we? So let's move on to the next question. I think we've answered that one fairly well. So question number two, which came from Matt. So again, if you're listening, thank you. Biggest gaming disappointment. Do you want me to take this one?
Yeah, you start.
So I've mulled it over because there's been a few. And we talked about it on the episode. And I when we did the awards this year, or last year now, and we didn't give The Walking Dead the biggest disappointment of the year because it was, we knew it was going to be disappointing. It had Game Mill on the front of it. It was never going to be good. So I can't really choose that. For me, the biggest disappointment in my gaming career, I suppose, if you want to put it like that, is Brink. And Brink was just so disappointing. I can't use any other word. It had all this hype behind it. It's not my type of game, usually, but I saw clips of it. I saw people on IGN hyping it up because I'm pretty sure they got paid to hype it up. And I'll say that allegedly, just so they don't do me for slander. Although how they could review it the way they did when the finished product was what I played, I genuinely don't know. All this hype around it, and I thought, you know what? It's Bethesda. I love Bethesda games. It looks decent in the clips. They've said it's brilliant. I'm going to pre-order it. And I went all in. I pre-ordered like the highest tier you could pre-order. It was like 70 quid. It came. I foolishly redeemed the little promo sleeve things that came with it before playing it. Played one game of it and went, well, that went very good. Maybe it's just the level I've picked or the character I've picked. Tried another one. No, that was it as well. Tried another one. My mate came up. Oh, let's do a two-player. Maybe it gets better in two-player. No, it's garbage. And I literally played it for 2.5 hours, maybe 3 hours, the first day it arrived, and it's never been back out of the box again. Couldn't send it back because I'd used the codes, although I wish I'd have tried, because at least then I wouldn't own it. Even if I didn't get my money back, it wouldn't be in the house, so I'd have got rid of it. And I've never played it since. And I don't know a single person that thinks it's good. I don't think I've ever met anyone who's played it and said it's a good game. It is just, from what I understand, it's a Team Fortress 2 ripoff. but done incredibly badly. And it's boring, and it doesn't play very well, and you get over-swarmed with enemies all the time, from what I remember of that 4 hours. And yeah, that for me was this... That was the point when I went, I am literally never trusting a review again. Not from a big company anyway. I will trust YouTube reviews from smaller independent YouTube reviewers. I will potentially try and play it myself somewhere before buying it, but I am never reading a review on IGN or one of the other big ones. I don't want to just target IGN, although it was them in this case. I'm never going to read a review on somewhere like that again and blindly go and spend 70 quid on a game that turns out being garbage just because I suspect they were having their pockets lined by the developers.
Yeah, that's fair.
So what about you?
I mean, it's probably my age, to be fair, but I am such a cynic when it comes to stuff now. So a lot of stuff has disappointed me over the last 10 years. Mostly gaming in as a broad spectrum. It is one of my favourite hobbies, but as I've literally in the last 5 minutes just discussed, the way the system has degraded over time has disappointed me. But I think the Wii U is one of my biggest disappointments from Nintendo, particularly because it came out with very little fanfare. I think a lot of people, the way it was marketed, I think most people just thought it was like an expansion of the Wii. It was like you bought the pad and you could just connect it to your old Wii and you'd be able to have this touchscreen functionality.
Yeah, when I first saw it, I thought, oh, they've brought a gamepad out and it's called Wii U. That's a weird name. And then it wasn't until I actually watched a demo of it. I was like, that's a completely different console. It was just such a bad naming convention. I think that's what did it. You give it a different name and it probably does fairly well.
I think we are incredibly lucky that Nintendo didn't decide to name their next console the Switch with... and try and carry the naming convention on. But yeah, and then what came out for it was either rehashed stuff from the Wii or other stuff that was available on other consoles that could run it better, or DLC versions of stuff that was already out and with like slight expansions on it and slightly better graphics. There was no game for it that I was like, this is the game I need this console for. The only thing I could think that was remotely comparable was Wind Waker, which by this point was a 10-year-old game that had smoother graphics.
Wasn't that Donkey Kong one? Tropical Freeze, wasn't that?
Yeah.
Exclusive to the Wii U.
It was.
And it was all right.
And it wasn't particularly good. It wasn't a phenomenal entry in the franchise. I wouldn't be like, that is the game I need this for.
Trying to think of any others, because I did have quite a big Wii U library. I mean, you say big, there weren't that many games for it, but there was that one that was like their version of Wii Sports, wasn't there, where you're in like a carnival and you got to do all those little mini games that utilise the pad. Yeah. That was relatively fun, I suppose, but it was basically a tech demo, so you wouldn't class it as a full game. I think I had Zombie U, but that was, like you say, you could get that for something else already that it played better on, from what I understand. Zelda was a remake. Skyward Sword, did that come out for it as well? Was that not like a straddled console one?
No, they couldn't do it because of the
motion.
Wiimote Plus.
I always thought there was a Zelda that came out for both. Oh no, that was at the end, wasn't it? That was Breath of the Wild, wasn't
Breath
it?
Breath of the Wild.
Which I can't believe that's a Wii U game. Like, when you look back, you just immediately go, yeah, that's a Switch game. You don't ever comprehend that it was... How did it run on Wii U? Because it's quite
badly,
big. It's
I would assume.
Did they slim it down or anything? Or was it the full experience?
It must have just had terrible popping. Everything must have just been, like, grey. It must have been like Silent Hill. The majority of the game, just grey everywhere. But I am looking down at the... Wii U that I've got next to me on my bookshelf with the games that I have for it. I have 4 games. That is Wind Waker, Mario Kart 8, and let's not get started on that. It's Hyrule Warriors, And I don't even know what the last one is. But yeah, I have got four games for that console.
I forgot about Hyrule Warriors. I wasn't massively fond of that anyway. Like, it's fun for about 20 minutes and then it's just like button mashing, isn't it? And there's nothing to it. Yeah. So yeah, I think that covers that off comprehensively as to why Eddie thinks the Wii U was a disappointment, which it was for most people. Although, when they announced the name of it, you sort of saw the red flags, didn't you? As soon as they went, it's a Wii U and it's got it. And then you look at the gamepad and go, oh, that's a novel idea. Oh, by the way, it's only got about 20 minutes battery life if you're using it for doing anything. And it weighs an absolute ton. And you need to, in some games, pick it up and aim it at the screen to make it work. It just, yeah, it had the red flags going for it. But you'd hoped that Nintendo, given the track record up to that point of more hits than misses, you thought they were going to do something decent with it, and then not so much. Right, next question. So this one came in from Anonymous, and I'm not surprised. Pete, and it's three words, Peach or Daisy.
Oh, God. To be fair, I think I would probably go with Peach primarily because she's got more characterization as she's been in more Mario things. She's actually had characterization from the movie, so she is a more rounded character, whereas Daisy is just there in like Mario Kart and stuff. It's just there's no character to her, so there's no thing to sort of be like, oh yeah, she stands out.
In the absence of Bowsette or whatever she's called, I think I would go with Peach as well for all the reasons you've just listed. So Anonymous has a second question again.
God's sake.
Oh, four words in this one. Amy Rose or Rouge? Come on, Eddie. We said we'd answer the questions.
I'd probably say Rouge, but primarily because Amy Rose got on my She genuinely got on my nerves in Sonic Adventure.
I was going Rouge, and for one of the words you mentioned, but not for the same reasons you mentioned it.
Yes, she has well-crafted assets, so the Sonic team can be proud in that, at least.
It's more that Rouge just looks more human. I mean, it's a question I don't want to answer anyway, but at least she's got more humanish characteristics than Amy, who is just pink Sonic.
More human and more sort of grown up
characteristics.
Whereas Amy Rose is a bit like a kid, and I don't want to even get into anything, to be honest with you.
I'm glad that's why you didn't mention Cream, because isn't Cream meant to be like 8 or something? So
yeah, something
probably for
like
the
that.
Best that didn't come up. But yeah, there you go, Anonymous. Thanks for those ones. So the next question comes from one of our Patreons, Lee, and he's actually sent a voice clip in, so here you go.
Yeah, I do. I have a question, actually. It's, can I get an R yet on podcast?
So I feel like this deserves some context. There's a woman on YouTube, I think she's on YouTube or TikTok or one of those, called Wendy Wildhog, which is brilliant in itself. But what she does, she's a very gravelly voiced older woman, and she basically took that oh yeah phenomenon from about 10 years ago and just does it all the time. Like when she's in Asda, she'll just shout it. And she's now taken to, this is a while back now, she's now taken to just going and shouting it through random people's windows and letterboxes and like going into people's houses and shouting it. And I'm pretty sure she's going to get arrested soon. So I'm pretty sure that's where this comes from. And we did say we would answer all the questions. So, Lee, no, you can't, would be the answer to that, because I'm not doing it. But there you
Neither
go.
Neither
that,
one
that's
of us has a gravelly enough voice to justify doing this.
So there you go. But at least we did mention it. Right, next question. How did we meet?
Oh,
and that's
interesting.
That's from someone called Jen. So thank you for that one. How did we meet?
We met at college.
Through a mutual... Well, it wasn't even a mutual friend, was it? It was somebody you were friends with. And I think I had a lesson with somebody who was friends with you guys. And I was big into wrestling. I think I had a wrestling t-shirt on. And they're like, oh, you should speak to Kev because he loves wrestling. And then I went and spoke to Kev, and your sort of group sort of adopted me. And I brought one of my friends called Sid with me, and we ended up in like a huge outcast group, didn't we, at college. I mean, we weren't the bottom rung of society, but we weren't at the top either. We weren't at our college. The cool people hung out in the canteen. We didn't go in there very often. The sort of the absolute reprobates hung out in like the little room that was off the social room, so they weren't allowed in the social room, so they got their own little separate room. We used to hang around in reception on a disabled ramp that no one ever used, because there was no one disabled at our college, was there? And they used to keep telling us off for standing there, even though no one ever used it. And then the one time that the principal came and told us we had to move because it was for disabled people, and we said there aren't any, one wheeled their way through the door, didn't they, and just completely proved us wrong. So that's how we met. Ended up being mates pretty much straight away, I think, didn't we? Because we were both into games and GameCube and that kind of thing. And then, yeah, had a few wild nights out, shall we say. One in particular where we were going to come back to mine and play GameCube all night, and then some of the other people we were with dragged us to a house party like 2 miles from my house. It all kicked off, windows got smashed, not by us, I'd like to add, and then we couldn't get home, so we decided to walk home down this like muddy country lane at like 3 a.m. and I don't think played any Resident Evil in the end, did we? I remember you not being best pleased.
I think we played half an hour.
I just remember being at that party and you just sat there with a face like thunder.
Well, who suggests to do that when you'd got plans?
You had your full GameCube and games in a backpack with you and you're at a house party. So,
and the storage solution was, oh, we're just going to put it in this wardrobe for you. in a locked room, is it? No, it's just in this room that anyone can get access to. What a hearty fuck you for that.
And then, I don't want to out poor old Kev, but he did something that I don't think he was very proud of during that party, which we don't talk about anymore. But yeah, we've had a few good times. We went.
Sorry, to be fair, the only reason I know Kev is because of an old mate of mine that used to work with him, and he went to a different college. He went to Arcat instead of where we went, and another of our mutual friends was stood. Because we ended up coincidentally being in the same class, philosophy class together. And he kept nudging me and going, I think that's Kev that our mate works with. I was like, right, okay, lovely. He's like, no, I think that's Kev. Again, lovely. Like, go and ask him then. So he walked up and said, are you Kev? And then gave his surname. However, he mispronounced his surname. And Kev just looked at him and went, no. And he went, oh, right, okay, shuffle back over to me. And he was like, I'm sure it's him. I went, well, ask him then. And he went back, said the exact same thing again. He went, are you Kev? Surname incorrectly pronounced. And he went, no. And I was like, I'm pretty sure that's not his surname. So I went up to him and went, are you Kev? Actual surname. He went, yeah, I am, mate. Pleased to meet you. And that's how we became friends. So he deliberately knew that this kid, the kid we knew him. And he was like, it's not my f***ing surname, mate. He was just adamantly like, nope.
That is standard.
Which is
Kev,
prime though, Kev.
If you're listening, Kev, because he's in Japan now, isn't he? So we don't get to see him as much. But yeah, if you ever want to come on and have a chat with us about, he's the one that's obsessed with Street Fighter, or he was. And was pretty good at Street Fighter back in the day. We've mentioned him before. So yeah, if you want to come and chat with us, give us a shout and we'll do something in the middle of the night so that you can do it at a reasonable hour wherever you are. So yeah, that's how we met. Not the most exciting story, but provided a few memories over the years. What have we got? Let's have a look. Favourite gaming soundtrack. That's come from one of our Patreons, the Sweaty Llama.
I think I've actually discussed this on the channel before. I think it was back when we did Majora's Mask. And it was a company called Theophony. And they did a limited run pressed LP version of a remastered Majora's Mask soundtrack that they had a full orchestra for, and it is still to this day one of my favorite soundtracks of all time.
I think I've got probably three tied for number one, and it would be Majora's Mask, Ocarina, because the music is different, isn't it? Even though it's very similar, there is differences. And then Sonic 1 on Game Gear which doesn't get mentioned very much, but some of the music in that is fantastic. Especially, I think the one that gets a lot of praise or does get mentioned quite a bit is the bridge theme. So there's a level in Sonic on the Game Gear, because Sonic on the Game Gear is very different to Sonic on the Mega Drive. And the first level's almost the same in that you in Green Hill Zone, you're going around the loops and all that kind of thing. But as you progress through that, you end up on a level called a couple of levels called Bridge. And it is just loads of the bridges from Sonic at different levels, and you have to traverse them to get across. And then the second stage of it is a, like one where it moves behind you. So it pushes you along the stage, which has never been done in any Sonic game apart from that, I don't think. But the theme in that level is so nostalgic for me. As soon as I hear it, I know what it is. It takes me straight back. And same for the jungle theme in that game as well. The jungle theme is really good. So for me, it's probably those three. Majora is something that I'd actually put on in the background and listen to.
Yeah.
Whereas the Sonic one is just something that I hear it and I'm instantly happy whenever I hear it. And a notable mention for Donkey Kong as well, especially the underwater theme from Donkey Kong 1. Donkey Kong Country 1, obviously. The underwater theme from that is just so relaxing and so perfect for what it is. So I wouldn't say the whole soundtrack necessarily, but that one particular song is really up there for me. Also from the Sweaty Llama, what game would you most like to see made into a film or TV show?
Ooh, I'll let you take this one first.
So I've thought about it quite a bit, and there are quite a few that I wouldn't mind seeing, but I'd really love to see a good Resident Evil 2 film made that just follows the game properly. Don't do all these weird asides, don't try and cram in elements of 1 and 3 and all the others, don't have a laser house that chops people into bits. Just have the story of Resident Evil 2 from Leon and Claire's perspectives, going through that game start to finish, because it is one of my favourite stories in any game, Resident Evil 2. And to see a film adaptation that's faithful to it, that has all that lore in it, because there's so much lore in Resident Evil 2 that you could use for material. Obviously in the game it's in folders and notes and stuff, but you could have that exposition in the film so much better with flashbacks or video camera footage or somebody reading the notes as you get like a visual of it, or there's so many ways you could do it. And I just think the Resident Evil 2 story is so perfect for a film. It annoys me every time they bring a game out and it isn't that, and it isn't close to that.
Yeah, it's a hard one to answer, really, because there's loads of games that I think would be perfect material for turning into a film or a TV series or something like that. We've discussed them previously, stuff like Bioshock, which has got a film on the cards, although that's gone particularly quiet. I think with the Mario Brothers film, I think Nintendo are going to start dipping their toe into that particular aspect, because there are so many avenues they can go down. They can go down the Metroid route, they can go down the Zelda route. There are so many options open to them that would, even if it wasn't a direct replica of Ocarina of Time, for example, but it was a Zelda film that had its own sort of unique story, there's so many ways they could do it. But I think something like Ghosts of Tsushima would be sort of like it'd be a long old film. It would be horrendously long to get that as either a film or a series, or even something like Sekiro, which you couldn't do Dark Souls. It's too ethereal and odd, and a lot of the exposition is done in item descriptions, so you wouldn't have a bloody clue what was going on half the time. But I think something like Sekiro, where you do have a character rather than something you have created, and or something that's just off the peg. But yeah, something like that. And I think Mass Effect would lend itself to something that is, even if they did it as a series, where they did series one, that was the first game, series two was the second game, and series three was potentially the third game without the ending. And they did something else with that ending. Even if they did it so that it was a bit like Logan's Run, where the heroes die at the end, I think that would still be an ending that would be suitable, that you've built all this hype behind and you get to the end and you fail. I think that would work. So yeah, those would be my sort of steers on it anyway.
I'm really surprised they've not made an Oddworld film. at some point, because that's got loads of lore behind it, and it's got a relatively likeable main character that people are familiar with. And I know he doesn't speak much, so you'd have to come up with a way to get the exposition in there. But I think that could work. I think an Oddworld film. I'm amazed they've not done it yet, with him sort of coming to the realisation of what's going on at the factory and trying to escape and then trying to set everyone free and stuff. I just think that'd work. I mean, basically like Toy Story 3, was it? Where they're stuck in the nursery and they have to get out and then rescue people and stuff. It's basically you hang it on the same plot points as that, but just with Oddworld. And yeah, I just think that'd be a really good... I wouldn't want to particularly see it myself. I'd watch it, but I wouldn't be clamouring for it. But I just think it lends itself really well to a film or a TV series, and they've just not done it.
Yeah, and I think that's part of the problem as well, to your point of hanging on the same notes as other stuff that's already come out. I think there are so many video games that have similar beats to films or TV series that have already come out. I think that you would struggle to make something with an identity of its own. So this is the kind of thing with stuff like Gears of War, doing that as a TV series. There are so many other films that have been done with aliens that burrow up from underground, or aliens that are remotely humanoid that use guns. District 19 springs to mind as something that is similar to that, quite gritty and realistic. Even Mass Effect, I suppose, you've got the likes of Star Trek, you've got the likes of Star Wars that are very that kind of sci-fi. It has its own sort of twist on the fact, but there is always... That's probably why the Halo series didn't do so well, aside from the fact that it was a bit crap. But
When you said a Mass Effect TV show, my head immediately went to the Orville, just less comedy, but the same idea, isn't it, pretty much? Going off and exploring new territory and making connections with alien species and all that kind of thing. So it could work. Yeah, I think my prediction for Nintendo in the next couple of years is that they will make a Donkey Kong movie and try and spin that off out of the Super Mario Brothers movie, and it won't go well. That is my prediction. Because I just don't know what you do for a plot in that. It doesn't lend itself, does it, really, to... It was okay as a secondary character in the Mario film, but pushing him into centre stage with Diddy and maybe Dixie and a couple of the others, where do you go with the story, I suppose? And they might be able to pull it off. And I think people accepted Seth Rogen as DK more than I thought they were going to do.
Yeah.
So there's a chance that it could do. But yeah, that's my prediction. They'll try and do a Donkey Kong spin-off and it will not end well. Right, next question. So we got two left, and I'll save that one for last. So this one didn't have a name on it either. Favourite Smash Brothers character to play as, I assume?
Mewtwo, every time.
I think it's DK for me. I just know his moveset quite well. And he's him or Bowser. I know they're slow, but they're powerful, so I don't have to land as many hits. And Kirby, probably, just because you get such a varied moveset depending on who you assimilate with. Worst would probably be, I am terrible with Pikachu, as much as I'd like to be good with him. He's a really hard character to get to grips with, isn't he? I mean, there's obvious ones like Game & Watch that I'd never pick. But of the ones that I would like to be good at, but I'm not, I think Pikachu is up there. I always really wanted to be good with Ness as well, but I just can't. I'm decent with him in every aspect apart from saving yourself, because you have to hit yourself with your own PK energy, don't you? To like boost yourself back on, and I can't do that. I'm not skilled enough to get that arc and bounce myself back up, so I invariably just die off the edge of the stage like in 2 seconds flat. But yeah, DK, I do love a bit of DK. Because you can just stand there and do that ground pound move and nobody can even touch you. You can just stand in the middle and do that for like 10 minutes. Last question. If you could hang out with anyone related to gaming, who would it be and why?
That's quite a hard one. I mean, they've all been particularly challenging and good questions in their own right, to be fair, but this one's... I think I would probably want to spend a good amount of time in Hideo Kojima's presence, because I think there's just something about him that, playing any of his games, there is something that is not standard about it. It doesn't matter what it is, you just... look at either his narrative or his character choices or the direction he chooses to take with the plot, and you do just go, where did that come from? And he must just have such a unique mind. I don't know whether that would translate into personality, because it doesn't necessarily, eclectic doesn't, or sort of auteur genius doesn't necessarily always translate to a relatable human being on a one-to-one basis. But I just think it would be fascinating to have a day with him just to see what his life is like and just to see how he processes stuff.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I had to really think about this one. I think one of the first people or persons that sprung to mind for me were the Oliver twins, just because I love the Dizzy game so much and it's a big part of my childhood. I'd love to speak to them about where they came up with the idea from and the challenges that they faced with it and where they got the ideas for like the level design and stuff, because some of it was really good. So they sprung to mind. I wouldn't mind sitting down with Matt Smith after we did the Jet Set Willy and Manic Miner episodes, just because he seems like such an interesting bloke after everything. I'd love to, if he was willing to speak about those days, find out what it was like when he was programming those and the stuff he went through to try and get the second game out in particular. But I mean, given he left the industry in 1988 and moved to the Netherlands, I can't see that being on the cards. But then from a more modern take on it, for me, it'd be people like, and I know I'll probably get hammered for this, but like people like the Game Grumps or Jontron or someone, because it was watching them do what they do that made me want to do this. And I probably, if I'd never have gotten into watching their programs, I wouldn't have been doing this now, and I really enjoy doing it. So I'd love to sit down and speak to them about, not even speak to them about anything, but like you said, just be in their presence and see how they do things and talk to them about stuff and just generally have an enjoyable time. Because I think if you were with them and you're sort of behind the scenes, I know a lot of what you see on the shows on YouTube are fun, but I imagine it's even more fun if you're there while it's all being put together and going on. So I'd love to, that experience for me would be like the pinnacle, getting to meet someone like that and speak to them, just because of how much they've inspired us to do this, I suppose, or me personally to do this, and by extension you do this as well. So yeah, that probably would be my pick. There are loads of people, aren't there, like people from Sega that I'd love to speak to, people from Nintendo and all that, but for me, I'd genuinely just like to chill out and play a game with someone, and that's what they do. So it's like, that'd be great to just be able to do that and have an insight into theirs and ask them how they do some stuff, because we want to do some stuff where we do games, like where we play them, and we just can't figure out the technical setup required to do it how we want to do it. So just to get that bit of knowledge from them would be amazing. But yeah, that's the last question on the list, I think. Let me just double check. Yeah, apart from the a few more sexual this character versus this character ones that I don't want to bring up that we got sent in by Anonymous, I think we've hit the end of it. So we've done all right, haven't we? I thought we might be padding here, but yeah, that wasn't too bad. So I think it's worth saying thank you to everyone now that's listened over the last year. We've been listened to by far more people than we ever expected would listen to this show, from all around the world as well. I mean, didn't we count it up and there was like, is it 40 odd or places around the world that we've had listeners in, albeit not always consistent listeners, but people from like over 40 countries or over 42 countries or something have listened to this podcast, which for me is ridiculous to think that we've reached that far out. I expected nobody outside South Yorkshire to listen to it, if I'm honest. So yeah, we thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you're still listening and you've stuck with us for the year. We do have plans for the upcoming year. We've got 12 games left, I think, is it, on the current list to get through. And a couple of those might get paired together because we don't have an awful lot to say about them. But then we've got two more books, which I'm sat here looking at, a Nintendo one and a PlayStation one. And there's not as much crossover as we expected either, is there? So we do have quite a few more games to go through. And then we just enjoy doing episodes like this as well, where we don't have to talk about a specific game. So even if we come to the end of all these books, we feel like we've got enough to carry on talking about. Maybe we're repeating ourselves. Maybe you listen to three of these and you've heard it all, but we're quite happy to just keep doing it. So thanks to them. Thanks to our Patreons in particular. So I'll read them all out on this one. Couple of coins tier, we've got Lee and we've got Harry Flynn. And in the bucket kicker tier, we've got Ric Flair and the Sweaty Llama. So thank you to you guys. You really do help keep the lights on while we're recording this, which I've just had to put on, actually, because we've been recording that long. It's got dark outside. And yeah, I don't know if you want to say a few words about the last year and what your experience has been.
It's been better, a damn sight better and a damn sight more fun than I expected or ever had thought it was going to be like. When you think about pulling together something like this, you do just, it's always going to be a passion project. And there's always that concern in the back of your mind, like, oh God, I hope this doesn't become like a chore. Mm. Or I hope that we do, even on the games where we have struggled to find even the remotest positive thing to say about it, or even just anything to say about it, because some of them we have literally been like, prior to coming on and talking about them, we've been there going, this is not going to get 10 minutes, let alone an hour. I am genuinely surprised at the consistent amount of shit we are able to talk for upwards of an hour about stuff that we haven't necessarily enjoyed, haven't necessarily played. In some cases, we have just watched Let's Plays of some of them because they've been so hard to get hold of. But it has been a genuine enjoyment for the last 12 months that once a week I get to sit down with a close friend and just either talk about something we're both passionate about or really kick the shit out of something that needs it.
This is it. I mean, from a sort of mental health perspective, the chance to do this an hour a week or 2 hours a week in this case, because even more so this week, to get to do this and take a little bit of time out of a busy schedule and just talk shit about games and catch up with an old friend, I think is really, really has been useful for me and really important to sort of separate that usual life from something from my past, I suppose, that I look upon fondly and don't get to do as much as I should probably do. So yeah, I think that's been a big part of it for me. But as you say, it's not become a chore. The editing, a little bit. But that's a me problem because I tend to snip loads of stuff where I could just put it out pretty much as we've said it. So that's on me, not on anyone else. But yeah, the actual recording hasn't become a chore at all. I genuinely look forward to it every week when we pick a new game and we sit here and talk about it. So yeah, here's to another year at least. Hopefully. We'll try and get the release schedule a bit tighter as well now. We had a couple of weeks here and there over Christmas, which I think we needed just to recharge. But hopefully we'll try and stick to a more weekly schedule as well now. So yeah, thank you everyone for listening. I think we'll call it there for this episode. If you've been listening on Patreon, thank you very much. If you're listening on Spotify or any of the other platforms, why aren't you a Patreon yet? Would be my only question, because we're serving up quality content like this a month early for you. If you do want to join, it is patreon.com/bucketlistgamers, and from I think it's a fiver a month, you get all the privilege of hearing us dead early. And for this one, actually, it didn't matter what tier you were in, you'll be listening to it early. So yeah, if that tickles your fancy and you want to help us out, head over there and check it out. But unless you've got anything else to add, we are under an hour, so we do have a few minutes if there is anything else.
No, I don't think I can talk about Pal World in the 7 minutes 45 remaining with the controversy that's going on with that. So that's something to look forward to for next time.
There you go. So with that said, we might have already talked about it in the main episodes, actually, because we've got a couple before this will come out. So if you've already heard about Pal World, wasn't that good or wasn't that rubbish, depending on what we end up saying about it. But yeah, thank you for listening. And I will say that is goodbye from me.
That's goodbye from me.